Hello and welcome to a new episode of Talking Future, a podcast by the Entrepreneurs Forum, where we talk to entrepreneurs about their work, their lives, and especially their views on the future and how they're innovating as they plan ahead. I'm Yvonne Bell, and today I'm talking to Jonathan O'Halloran, co-founder and CEO of Quantum DX. Founded in 2008, Quantum DX is a life science tools and diagnostics company with a mission to make transformative quality diagnostic technologies accessible to everyone so that diseases can be detected and treated earlier and transmission eradicated. Their flagship product, QPOC, is a highly innovative portable laboratory that can help personalize medicine by diagnosing disease in minutes at the patient's side, all for a few dollars. Built to help detect viral and bacterial pathogens such as the strains of HPV, QPOC is now being targeted towards SARS-CoV-2 detection, helping to identify the virus, control it, and save lives. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
Right, now, where did your passion for this sector begin?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think it started initially at high school. I got fascinated by science and specifically genetics. And that led me on to reading books such as The Hot Zone and Virus Hunters. And yeah, I really got fascinated by epidemiology when I was at university. It's been with me for quite some time.
Were your family scientists?
No, I come from a very long line of military men.
All right.
So I was the black sheep.
So there was no sort of boffin behind you?
No, none of that.
None of that. And then, so you went to school and then you went to university, did you?
Yeah. So I went to university and I studied at Sussex University for my undergraduate degree. It was one of the only, if I, one of two universities at that time that was offering a pure genetics degree. And it just so happened it was just around the corner from where I grew up.
Well, that was handy, wasn't it?
Yeah, very, very handy, yeah.
Yeah. And then you obviously stuck with genetics because it must have fascinated you at the time.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I just completely fell in love with it. And I found it pretty easy as well. I think people do find things easy when they're passionate about them and really enjoy it. But it was fantastic. And about that time, the Human Genome Sequencing Project was being launched. Mm-hmm. And that shone a real spotlight onto the discipline. And it was such an exciting time with all that discovery and scientific advance, etc. It was amazing.
Yeah. From that, in a lot of cases, scientists stick with science and they do research and they make reports to the government and things. But you actually, at some point along the way, you decided to sort of make it into business, didn't you?
Well, during my postgraduate degree, I was fortunate enough to go over to Harvard. And it was at Harvard that I saw a talk by a chap called Craig Venter. And all the boffins who will be listening into this will know him as the guy who did the public human genome sequencing effort. And he talked about his journey as a scientist entrepreneur. And it just fascinated me. There was something he said in his talk that just resonated. He said, one day we'll be able to do sequencing in a portable handheld device. And I walked away from that talk and thought, God, I want to build one of them. And about 25 years later, here I am.
I mean, how long was it till those sort of things became a reality? Was it one in the last 10 years?
Yeah, pretty much in the last 10 years, really, where we've got other supporting technologies such as microfluidics and manufacturing techniques has now facilitated the ability to do rapid diagnoses, rapid sequencing, and that sort of thing at the point of care, which is where you want to do your diagnostic test. You don't want to really send a sample into a lab and wait a week to get your result back. You want it then and there, while the patient waits.
Yeah. I mean, we thought that was good then, when we could still get it tested, but things have moved on. So early on in the business side of things, I mean, how did you learn the business? You know, you come from a scientific background, and there's a lot to business that you have to learn on the way. Is that how you learned it?
So I learned wherever I could. So reading books and speaking with my peers and doing it the old-fashioned way. So I'm very fortunate enough to, in the village where I grew up, Sir Freddie Laker lived there, and I'm still very good friends with his son. And his advice to me and his son was always, if you want to learn a business, start at the bottom and work your way to the top. So I, straight out of my postgraduate degree, I started a position at the Nuffield Hospital's pathology lab as a technician. Uh-huh. And yeah, my role was just to do all the little bits in the lab. And I went from different disciplines, from biochemistry to hematology to virology to microbiology, learning everything I could. And I used to take my boss to the pub every lunchtime so I could ask him questions. And mm-hmm. and after about 6.5 years, I figured, oh, I've probably learned enough now. And I started my first company up.
All right.
And we raised some money and we got some contracts and away we went.
Yeah. What was that company doing at that point?
So we were a genetic services company. So we had negotiated the exclusive distribution licenses for a number of high complex genetic tests into the UK private sector. And we put screening programs around it and clinics set up at the Nuffield Hospitals and a few other places for us to roll these tests out.
And who was your early team then? Who were you working with?
So I was working with my partner from my company now, Elaine Warburton. So Elaine gave me the best education in business. Without her guidance, I think I would have fallen flat on my face a long time ago.
Yeah, so she was your mentor then?
Absolutely, yes.
And so what happened after that then? You had that company for, a few years?
Yeah, we had it for a couple of years. And one of the biggest lessons that both Elaine and I learned from that is that you've got to be careful of culture and choosing your partners carefully, because there was a bit of a board dispute in terms of where we wanted to take the company direction. Elaine and I wanted to stick with the lab route, whereas the other side of the board wanted to move more towards the clinic side of things. But we just couldn't see that that would be scalable. So Elaine and I decided to exit and set up Quantum DX.
Right, so that was in 2008, by that time.
Yeah, so just before 2000, so the end of 2007, and we eventually set Quantum DX at the end in March 2008.
And how did you get all your stuff? Did you just pick and choose from people you knew, or did they come naturally? Or
it was more of a it just evolved naturally, and we grew slowly, we had some interesting interview techniques back in the day.
What was that like?
Mainly down the pub.
All right, simple stuff.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. But back then, we were really focusing on finding people who could wear a lot of hats and were comfortable doing that. Uh-huh. As we grow the company, obviously that changes as you then focus more on individual disciplines and people who are happy living within that. And I'll be more collaborative. And so it's interesting to see how culture changes over time within a company. Managing that is really, really tricky.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question. How is the firm changed? Is it mainly the size of it and how you, like you say, manage the people?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, the size is we're at 100 people at the moment. Uh-huh. So the culture is completely different from that perspective in terms of to do was when we were like 10, 15 people, we had multiple roles wearing multiple hats across the business. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, each employee has specific tasks within a certain area and then has to collaborate with people for other areas. And that's a cultural shift in people's minds. Not everybody can cope with it. Some people are fine with it. But trying to maintain the overall culture of inclusiveness and having fun at work and a mission, whilst completely radically changing the way in which we operate, mm-hmm. it's a tricky business, and that has to come from the top.
Yeah. And I suppose you've obviously had to change your way of working as well, because you probably wore very many hats at the beginning, and you'll have had to specialize a bit, have you?
Yes. Yeah. And that's, that is a tricky journey as well. I mean, whereas before, the success of my role was an ability to slip from being the cleaner one day to being the chief scientific officer the next day. Whereas now, we've hired high quality people in certain positions, and I have to be cognizant that I shouldn't be interfering with what they're doing. What's the point of spending a lot of money on experts if you micromanage them? And that's a tricky thing to let go of.
It is very difficult. So what would you say is your USP for your company? I mean, we're talking about here about QPOC as the main thing, but, and is that your USP? Is that where you've come from, and that's the main thing?
Yeah. So when you look at the markets that we're looking at getting into, diagnostics, you've got technologies that are able to do point of care tests. And what I mean by point of care is running the test whilst the patient waits outside of a laboratory. And what we're able to do is to do those tests very quickly. But the USP element of what we're doing is that we're able to run lots and lots of different tests very quickly at the point of care, not just one or two. So for instance, what we could put one patient sample in, one swab, and we could test for up to 60 different viruses all in one test.
Wow. That's huge, isn't it? That is a huge leap from where we were in the days where we had to send it off to the lab.
Absolutely. It's enormous leap, because what this allows us to do then is to completely change the paradigm of testing and how it's operated. Whereas before, if a patient walked into, say, a pharmacy, that pharmacist is not a doctor, so wouldn't be able to provide an initial empirical diagnosis that would say, okay, we need to test this person who's presented with a fever of unknown origin for flu. Oh. And if it was negative for flu, oh, well, maybe we should try RSV. And if it's negative for RSV, oh, now we'll test for SARS-CoV-2. So it's three tests back to back. Whereas now we don't need a doctor to do the empirical diagnosis. All we will say is we'll just put a fever chip in the QPOC, and we'll test for everything that can cause a fever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like that.
Just like that.
You've made it easy. So that, I mean, we're at a point now in our own history, aren't we, where we are all testing ourselves regularly with little devices. Now, QPOC was not designed for COVID. It was way before that, wasn't it? And what were you looking for then?
Yeah, well, originally, you're right, not designed for COVID at all. But it was designed for another pandemic that's attacking the world at the moment. That's antimicrobial resistance. And this is the phenomenon where bacteria and viruses have developed resistance to the drugs that we use to treat them. So much so that the drugs no longer work. And what we had planned on doing was to have panel tests. And this means doing lots of tests at one time, where we can look at identifying the pathogen, the bacteria or the virus, and then looking at mutations within its genome that have been shown to confer drug resistance. And so by doing this in a single shot, in 30 minutes, we were able to say, you've got gonorrhea and it's resistant to the first line of drugs, so you need to take the second line of drugs. And that's really important, because right now what will happen is a patient will walk into the doctor's office, get tested for gonorrhea, comes back as positive 72 hours later, and they're given a drug. We don't know if that drug will work. And this is why we're seeing a huge increase now in the incidence of gonorrhea, and an even bigger increase now in the incidence of drug resistance gonorrhea. So it's a huge issue.
Yeah. And is that in our society as well as underdeveloped countries?
It's a global phenomenon. Yeah, a global phenomenon, unfortunately. Yeah. Okay. The UK government did a review on this, the O'Neill review, and suggested some frightening statistics of the number of people who would die and the total cost to the economy if we do nothing. And so it's very, very important that we we put the same kind of response that we have done for SARS to antimicrobial resistance, because very soon it will become a much bigger issue.
Yeah, and it won't just be gonorrhea, will it?
It's across the board.
Yeah. So as you come along the way with this growth, you must have had to have money. And one of the foundations that you've worked with is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which people have heard of. So what was that experience like?
That experience was fantastic. We're fortunate enough to have met Bill a couple of times now as well. And working with the Gates Foundation is challenging, in the sense that they've got very clear ideas of what the price of these things should be, what the turnaround time should be, and where you should deploy them. It helps us focus what is important in terms of specifications of the device.
I mean, in my introduction, I mentioned the word dollar, and that obviously comes from the fact that you're working internationally here, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And most people will equate things in dollars internationally, especially in some of the markets that we've been looking at.
Mm-hmm. And obviously you did get money from them, but it wasn't as much as you wanted, was it? Or was it?
Well, at the time, it was exactly the amount that we wanted. So what they do really well is funding early stage ideas to get them to the point where they can mature into businesses. And that's exactly what we did. The next stage of funding that they do is they are waiting then for implementation. So when the technology is all approved, has scaled to a point where the costs have come down through economies of scale, then the Gates Foundation will get involved again into, number one, start running health economics studies, implementation studies, and then rollout studies within LMICs. So they sit both sides of the product development timeline.
And that's a good way to do it. And then at least you've got people coming through all the time, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So how did COVID, when that kicked off, how did it affect Quantum DX?
It put a turbocharge onto our business, really. We recognized pretty early on that QPOC was uniquely suited to the diagnosis of SARS-CoV-2. We pivoted the company immediately, got an assay developed, and started selling it, and scaled our manufacturing rapidly.
What's an assay?
Oh, an assay is the technical term for a test.
All right.
Yes.
Just technical. So that was, you thought, well, this is the way to go now. And has that worked the way you thought it would? Have you got out there in a big way?
Yeah, so we got the test onto the QPOC, and it's been in clinical trials, and it's been doing extremely well. And the early signs for commercially are that it is a great product. That really is underlining and highlighting how well the QPOC operates at that point of care. It's not been an easy walk in the path. For us, they're always difficult setting up manufacturing lines without being able to visit the manufacturing lines, which is always a tricky thing.
Was that because of COVID?
That's because of COVID, yeah. So we've had to raise money, significant amount of money. I mean, we're talking about £30 million now, without ever meeting the investors, without the investors ever coming to Newcastle to see the QPOC or the company. We've had to set up manufacturing lines in Copenhagen, in Felixstowe, and in Singapore, all without ever visiting them, all remotely, and dealing with all the regulatory aspects and the quality control. That's been one hell of a challenge. And due to the speed that we needed to do it, we had to do it in half the time that we normally would have. So it's been a crazy roller coaster ride.
Yeah. But it's like having your hands tied behind your back with that lot, isn't it?
Yeah, and legs and blindfolded.
Yeah. So just in bigger terms, what lessons do you think the healthcare and tech sector have learned from COVID? What's happened in that industry?
Well, I think the lessons learned go across the board, from operational to scientific, to all the way to getting hold of clinical samples so that we can validate the technology. It's shown that the system is too bureaucratic and not built for rapid change. However, when there is a motivation to do it, those barriers can be dropped down, both politically and operationally, by motivated individuals who are willing to bust through all of the red tape. Yeah. And so that gives me hope for reform in the future once we've learned all of the lessons moving forward. I mean, yeah. Procurement, for instance, from the government, that's always been a clunky, difficult, red tape-ridden process. But during the pandemic, it became streamlined and simple. Didn't always work, but we were in a pandemic, so no one could blame anyone for that. And we got through it looking pretty good, especially from a vaccine perspective, almost the best in the world. So, yeah, I just hope that the positive lessons that we've learned from this will be kept into the future.
Yeah, and that's for everything, isn't it? Mindset as well as
absolutely
physically getting things done. Uh-huh. Yes. So what do you think the face of the future will look like in, you know, 10 or 20 years? And what exciting technologies do you think will change things from there? Because obviously in your time, you've seen a huge change. Can you envisage what it's going to be like in 20 years?
Well, I think everybody will have a device at home that can run their own pathology testing. So if little Johnny wakes up in the morning with sniffles, you can quickly run a test before they go off to school. Mm-hmm. That will be all linked into digital healthcare, AI driven, and a lot of what we will be seeing now in terms of having to go into a GP's clinic and everything will be decentralized, mm-hmm. Including the testing, the consultations, etc. And there will be a lot more options for us as well. So, yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see where we go.
So it goes further than Dr. Google, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. An awful lot further.
Yeah, the way that we sort of look at everything when you think you've got something and you Google it, you've got an end there. At least you can test it yourself. But so what are you looking forward to in that? Are you just looking forward to being part of it all?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think when you look at QPOC, that's really the start of that big vision that I have of fully decentralized home-based testing, because it's providing that initial look at what it would look like in terms of running these syndromic panels, as we call them, i.e. testing for everything that causes a symptom, such as fever or gastrointestinal diseases, etc. And that will give us the view of, is this possible? Will people adopt it? Is it easy to use? What are the pitfalls and learnings? And, you know, eventually, once we've learned all of that, then we can start looking at how we devolve everything to the home.
Yeah. And I suppose that sort of behind that, what you were saying about the resistance to bugs and things, we're then going to have to develop something that will help us, because it's fair enough knowing what you've got, but what do you do about it if we don't have antibiotics that are working?
Yeah, exactly. We are, and I don't want to alarm or scare anybody, but I think it might be necessary, because we are on the path to a situation where drugs don't work anymore. And when you think back to how things were in the Victorian age, pre-penicillin, that's a horrific thing, a huge concern. But we're well on the way to that. What we need to be able to do is manage what we have, or much better, and start developing new therapeutics. But no point developing a new drug if a year later resistance is developed for it. So therefore we need what's called much better antibiotic stewardship. And the heart of that is going to be diagnostic tests that will be able to determine which drugs will work and which drugs won't.
And about being an entrepreneur yourself, could you ever think of yourself as staying in the lab? You know, having stayed in the lab, that would never have happened with you, would it?
No. As my team say, I don't have enough patients to be in the lab, and they kindly asked me not to enter the lab anymore, which is a shame. So yeah, I can't see myself going back, although I do miss it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But obviously the fact that you've got all that knowledge, it makes you able to take the business on. And what do you like about being an entrepreneur then?
I just love the excitement, you know, the endless possibilities, and you know, having that ability to change quickly, try different things out, all whilst focusing on getting from A to B, and B being that vision, that goal that we see. And the best thing about it is when you get that customer feedback that says that the vision that you had 15, 20 years ago is now impacting positively my life, that's amazing. I mean, to sit back and think, well, you know, this QPOC is helping people is amazing.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Good, give you good feeling.
Oh yeah, very much so.
And obviously you said earlier that you you did read books and you did listen to other entrepreneurs and look at other businesses. Do you still do that? And is there anybody in particular that you do follow?
With reading, so I'm dyslexic. So reading always takes too much time. So I've discovered Audible. And,
oh yeah.
And that's my family live down in Brighton and I live up in Newcastle. I've been driving a lot during the pandemic. And so I've been listening to a lot to books. And I still do that now. It's very important to, you know, just take more ideas in, work out, you know, where are my gaps? And I think it's very important. And also very important to keep talking to your peers. I mean, especially during this pandemic, I spent a lot of time on the phone with other CEOs of diagnostic companies as we've been sharing war stories of dealing with the government and getting ideas of how to change the business. But yeah, it's a constant learning. If you stop learning, then you lose your edge.
So you see the they are competitors, but you actually use them and you use each other, do you?
Yeah. And during the pandemic, the competitor thing went away. Everyone just got together and said, you know, what can we do to help? And we've all worked together, it's been brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, those days are over now. We're back to competing with each other, but it was very, very useful.
That's good for business, though, to have some competition.
Yes. Yeah, very much so.
So for people starting up, what advice would you give them? What would your tip of the week be that would sort of make people think about when they're going into businesses?
It's the obvious is know your industry and not just know it cursory, live and breathe it. I started as a technician and was 6 years at that, learning everything I could. If you do that and you've immersed yourself in it completely and you're still very passionate about it, then you'll be able to have all of the tools available to you to survive all of the low moments, and there's going to be tons of them.
That sounds great. Good way to end it. But it's what happens in business, isn't it? It's just the way it goes.
Yes. Yeah. You've got to be realistic about this. It's a roller coaster.
Good. Okay. Well, thanks very much for that. That was a nice optimistic look at things as well, because from a mere mortal's point of view, it can be a bit alarming to hear what's on the horizon, but then we don't know what's going on in the background. So there are people like you out there who are doing things to try and mitigate whatever disasters we might come upon.
Yes, lots of us.
Lots of you. Good. Okay, well, thanks very much, Jonathan. Good
to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.